As the United States' perch atop the world order is called into question, a look back, if you will, at a moment that seemed to then shatter the United States' aura of invincibility. April the 30th, 1975. The U.S. pulls its final troops from Saigon after scenes of desperation at the embassy and the arrival of victorious communist forces from the north. Who knew then that Hanoi and Washington would reconcile thanks to booming trade? When during a 2016 visit, the then U.S. President Barack Obama celebrated Vietnam's storied street food in a $6 dinner with celebrity chef Anthony Bourdain, it seemed that the pendulum had swung for good. However, now comes Donald Trump's tariffs and Washington's ire at a China plus one policy of outsourcing manufacturing to neighbors on the cheap. Beijing's leader Xi Jinping recently paid his respects at Ho Chi Minh's mausoleum outside Hanoi while on a regional tour. Back then, in 1975, it was the Cold War. Today, what's Vietnam's position on the past and current superpower showdowns? Today in the France 24 debate, we're looking at Vietnam then and now. And with us from what is now Ho Chi Minh City, journalist Jim Lorry, who covered the fall of Saigon. He's the author of The Last Helicopter, Two Lives in Indochina. Welcome to the show. And thank you for staying up for what is already April the 30th, where you are. Historian Claire Tran is Associate Professor of History of Southeast Asia at the University of Paris Cité. Good to see you.
Yes.
From San Francisco, Duan Bui, journalist at the French news magazine Le Nouvel Ups. Thanks for joining us.
Hello.
And from Washington, Robert Manning, distinguished fellow at the Global Foresight Hub of the Stimson Center think tank. Good to see you.
Happy to be here.
You can listen, like, and subscribe to the France 24 debate, by the way, wherever podcasts are streamed. 50 years ago, a 27-year-old reporter filing for U.S. network NBC was there to watch history in the making.
NBC News correspondent Jim Lorry, one of the reporters who stayed behind, told of South Vietnamese clawing at the top of the wall and having their fingers mashed away with rifle and pistol butts wielded by American Marines and embassy civilians.
We think that the American has some methods or find many ways to save us from the communists. We don't want to stay here anyway.
But do you know that all the Americans are gone?
Yes, I know that, but I must come in case, just in case.
But there's no way because all the helicopters are gone.
Can you help us?
The U.S. Embassy behind me has been completely looted. The South Vietnamese obviously are angry at the American withdrawal. Many of them have said that they were left out in the evacuation. They were unable to make the helicopters. Many of them were American employees.
Jim Lorry, what's the defining moment of that day?
Well, the defining moment occurred just after that piece to camera was done, and that was the surrender of Saigon by a man named Dinh Van Minh, who had been president of South Vietnam for less than 48 hours. And within a few hours of his surrender at 10:30 a.m. Saigon time on the 30th of April, North Vietnamese tanks came from all directions into the city. The Americans, of course, had gone, as we described there. And North Vietnam was now in control of Saigon. The war had ended, the American-backed war, which had dragged on for nearly 20 years in one shape or another, was ended. And South Vietnamese were having to cope with a new regime, one they were very uncertain of. And I was very privileged to be able to watch the first 3 weeks, at least, of the new government's installation in Saigon. We were able to travel a bit around the country, and it was obviously one of the most remarkable stories that I had ever covered in my young career at that point as a network news correspondent.
Now, the bulk of U.S. troops had pulled out 2 years previous. So at that moment in 1975, we saw in those images the scenes of panic, those desperate to get out. There were, 7,000 people helicoptered out in the final day or two. Was there a feeling of revenge, or was it just a feeling of elation when you did your travels?
Well, first of all, there was this fear in Vietnam of a bloodbath. Now, partly that had been circulating. There's been a propaganda campaign so that South Vietnamese feared the worst. All kinds of rumors that young women would be forced to marry North Vietnamese wounded veterans. Stories about young women being having their fingernails torn out, those kind of things. But as we went around the country very quickly, we found there was a sense of coming together. I was surprised. Even on the first day in the afternoon, civilians in Saigon came out into the streets quite tentatively at first, and they began to talk to these very young North Vietnamese soldiers that had come into the city. These were kids, really, really young kids who had never seen the big city. And of course, Saigon was always a hustling, a big commercial center, and the people were far more sophisticated than anybody in the northern countryside. So there was this immediate trying to figure out who each side was. And it was remarkable to me because we expected not bloodbath, but we expected at least more violence in Saigon. We didn't see it in those first 3 weeks.
Duan Bui, when you talk with family members and friends, how do they remember this period?
Actually, I'm totally a byproduct of what happened in 75. So we might think it's the past, but for me, it's really the present, you know, because normally I'm based in France, but now I'm in the US for writing a program and with that, the DIVAN, the Diasporic Vietnamese Arts Networks, because actually my family has been scattered after 75. So part of my family is in France and the other part is in the US. One of my aunts was in one of those helicopters flying on April 30th. And I also have part of my family who stayed in the north, who were on the tanks, who from the army on North Vietnam, who arrived in the reunification palace. So I'm really, you know, like this byproduct of this war. Actually, just, you know, in Vietnam, they don't. I have always heard about this event, April 30th, and I've always heard the fall of Saigon. But when you go to Vietnam, of course, it's not the fall of Saigon, it's our form, it's the liberation of Saigon. And to me, it really sums up everything. It tells a lot about history because history is so complex. You know, there is always two sides. And actually, again, we might think it's the past because it happened like 50 years ago, but right now we still see the aftermath of what happened 50 years ago, just by the fact that right now the Vietnamese diaspora in the US is around 2.3 million. So you have wars, but after the wars, you have all those population movements, like 2.3 million who finally became American. It's, you know, and this kind of history. I'm a journalist, I've been in Ukraine, and I remember at 2022, when there was the full-scale invasion, there was 5 million Ukrainians flying also. So it's like, you know, this history and those images that we see, it always repeats itself. So again, we might think it's history, but this history can help us understand the present times.
How about Claire Tran, your family? Does it remember it as the fall of Saigon or Reunification Day?
Oh, well, when I was 10 years old, when I see this image, so it was the only image of my fatherland I saw at that time.
Where were you living?
At that time, I was living in France. Mm. So a part of my family live in Vietnam, another part live in the States, and another one in Australia. So most of the family in Vietnam have such a situation. And I have also family in North Vietnam. So It's a very complex history. And I think that on such a day, you have a conflict of memory. You have the memory of the winners. You celebrate the victory. It's the day of liberation, the day of reunification, because Vietnam was divided in two parts. And before, under the French, they were divided in three parts. So it's very important for the winners to say that they succeed in making the reunification of Vietnam. But on the other side, it's also for all these refugees. It's a very sad story. It's a traumatic story. Those who left on the boat, the boat people, we called. And so for them, it's the Black April. It's another way to call this day.
Robert Manning, this was something talked about in Hollywood movies and novels in the United States. It's seen as the end of a kind of American exceptionalism by some. Today, what are people saying where you are about what happened 50 years ago?
Well, America has never been had much of a memory, and I think The contrast between what's going on in Vietnam, 50 years, this celebration and so on, 50 years later, and largely silence in the U.S. I think for the U.S., reconciliation was very, very difficult. You saw it in all the popular culture, the Rambo movies, we're going to win next time, and that sort of thing for years. And in fact, I don't know when reconciliation would have happened were it not for two Vietnam veterans, Senator McCain and Senator John Kerry, who pushed in Congress to reopen ties and normalize relations with Vietnam. Without that, I think we would have still been kind of stewing in our juices.
Yeah, it's interesting because to hear today, and that works, you could say, both ways. To hear the Wall Street Journal's reporter describe it, the biggest attraction at Ho Chi Minh City's new War Remnants Museum are Americans themselves. He writes the local visitors all want to have their selfies taken with the foreigners. And again, it's that. So the question is the same thing true? I guess I'll put it to Duan Bui. Is the same thing true for Americans as described there by Robert Manning as for the Vietnamese, in that people aren't looking too much towards the past?
Actually, I don't think so. I think that we need to know more about our roots, about our history. And the thing is, this history of Vietnam and the two wars, Indochina War and the American War, it has always been told from the American and the French side. So, for example, about colonization, we had that, you know, very successful film with Catherine Deneuve, Indochine. And after, for the Vietnam War, you have all those Hollywood films like Apocalypse Now and Full Metal Jacket, etc., etc. But in all those films, I remember when I saw those films and I was young, I was always so astonished because I couldn't I couldn't hear the voices of Vietnamese people. Because really, when you watch to Apocalypse Now, Vietnamese people, they just get shot, you know, by the Kalashnikov, and you can't even hear their voice. And even more in those films, when they speak Vietnamese, sometimes the actors didn't even speak Vietnamese. So I didn't even have the chance to see Vietnamese actors talking Vietnamese in films that were supposed to talk about the Vietnam War. So I think I've been, you know, always looking for those voices. I have always been looking for those silent stories, and I guess that's how I became a writer, because finally this part of the story, the Vietnam War, told by Vietnamese people, we had to wait to find it. And of course, I'm thinking about novels like The Sympathizer of Vic Dang Nguyen, that was adapted by HBO recently. But it took a long time, like almost 50 years, for us to hear those voices and not just to have the war told on the American side.
Yeah, and they are telling those stories, especially around this 50th anniversary. His tank's now in a museum. Wu Dang Tuan was immortalized by the late great French photojournalist Françoise de Mulder as he crashed through the gates of the presidential palace as the last president of South Vietnam capitulated.
When we entered, I realized we were the ones who crashed through the main gate of the Independence Palace. When we came closer to the palace, we didn't know where it was. I didn't think our tank was the first one crashing through the gate.
And Jim Lorry, from what I understand, Tank 390 is a big attraction at the museum there in Ho Chi Minh City.
Well, the tank actually is on the grounds of the palace. I might describe for you what was going on today in front of the palace. There were literally thousands of Vietnamese gathered around the gates. There are large grandstands that have been put up for a big parade that will begin in a few hours' time down Lê Duẩn Boulevard towards the palace. I saw people holding up facsimiles of 1975 newspapers and comparing the newspapers to what they saw in front of them at the palace. People were in a very buoyant mood, joyous.
Were these old people or young people?
Young people. These are people that would have no memory of 1975. This is a country, of course, of very young people. 100 million people, double what it was back in 75. Average age, 37. This is a very young country. They don't think an awful lot about the war. They think about a very prosperous present and future that they're having right now. And people were out in the streets today. They're celebrating. And what are they celebrating? Pride in their country. They defeated the French. They defeated the Americans. And in 1979, they defeated the Chinese. So the Vietnamese, for a little country, feels awfully good about itself. And that is what is being celebrated here. Now, mind you, all controlled by the Communist Party in Hanoi, but these celebrations are part of a national sense of we have stood up. And in fact, since the 1990s, they have indeed become a very robust economy, one of the little tigers of Southeast Asia. And it is extraordinary for someone like me, who's been coming in and out of Vietnam for 55 years, it's extraordinary to see what is happening on the streets and what is happening in general in this country.
All right. And in the little look at those preparations for April 30th, 2025, it's a report read by Emerald Maxwell.
Last-minute rehearsals and preparations are underway. And in Ho Chi Minh City, the excitement is palpable.
I'm so very happy and proud of my country, Vietnam. The 50th anniversary is a symbol of peace and happiness.
It is so emotional because when the country was liberated in 1975, I was a student and our whole school marched in the streets. And now, 50 years later, I'm able to live in a peaceful time.
50 years ago, the city then called Saigon fell to the communist Northern Vietnamese troops, marking the end of the devastating war and the start of the country's reunification. It's a day that many Vietnamese cherish.
We were overwhelmed with joy. People came out and cheered for us. I have no words to express the happiness for the soldiers who came to Saigon on that day.
But not everyone recalls that time so fondly.
Saigon, April the 30th, 8 o'clock. The last American helicopter on the roof of the American embassy prepares to lift off the last of the evacuees fleeing before the advancing communist armies.
As the northern troops drew closer, Operation Frequent Wind carried over 1,000 Americans and over 5,000 Vietnamese and other foreigners to safety in what became the biggest helicopter evacuation in history. Others who had reason to fear the communist takeover escaped via the Saigon River. In two decades of fighting, some 3 million Vietnamese died on both sides of what is known in Vietnam as the American War. But ultimately, predictions of a communist bloodbath in the fall of Saigon proved false. The city was renamed Ho Chi Minh after the country's revolutionary leader, and it's now Vietnam's major economic hub. Variously known as Liberation Day or Black April, today authorities refer to April 30th as Reunification Day, in a bid to unify the country and the Vietnamese diaspora.
Is it accurate, Claire Tran, to call it the American War?
Oh, it's a good question. I can see that many Americans call them American War, but there is some debate among the researchers to talk also about civil war. So definitely, it's also a civil war because the communists get the keep the power for himself. But we have to remember that, Laurie told that, that it was a long war. You have the French occupation for 90 years, then the Japanese occupation, then the French war, Vietnam War, Indochina War, 8 years. Christopher Gosha, the historian, talk about a total war. Since 1950, the French-Vietnam War was financed by the American, and then the American from 1955 to 1975. So you when you see, you visit Vietnam, you cannot imagine the story of all the Vietnamese, all the family, the deaths and the injured people, the Agent Orange, the napalm, and so on. So, and all the bomb, 5 million tons of bomb, two times more than during all the Second World War. So we can see that the Vietnamese today are proud of that. But what I wanted to say also is that this commemoration is also a way for the Communist Party to tell that they are legitimate because they won the war many times, but also legitimate because they succeed in open the country with the Doi Moi, and then it's a great success on an economic point of view in the ASEAN. Vietnam is really a good
So how would you example. How if you were to put it in proportions, how much of it is, because this is a question we often ask about Algeria, how much of the legitimacy of those in power rests on history and how much rests on what's happening in the present?
I think both. And all the military parade show that it was a military victory. And at the same time, they celebrate also the fact that about the economic success. And the next challenge, it's not only, it's no more to win a war, even if with China, it's sometimes a bit also difficult in the South China Sea for the Chinese, but East Sea for the Vietnamese. But the real challenge is to become a middle power, to get more prosperity. And I want to remember that in the beginning of the next year, it's the next Communist Congress, the 14th, and the Vietnamese decided to, they have an expression, the new era, and the idea is to, there is two new next commemoration in 2030 is the anniversary of the Communist Party, 10 years of the Communist Party, and in 2045, it's anniversary of the independence. And so they wanted to become, at that date, a developed country. So the great challenge for the Communist Party to keep the legitimacy is to bring Vietnam to prosperity and to become a developed
by that one-century deadline.
Yes.
Ho Chi Minh City, a long way from the French capital, but here, hiding in plain sight on a bustling side street, France 24's social media editor, Jade Heyuyu, still managed to catch the vibe.
A warm Xinjiao from Vieille Cafe in the trendy Bastille neighborhood in eastern Paris. Here is the house specialty, cocoa, with half cocoa milk, half cafe. It's kind of like half communism and capitalism. So, what do people think about what happened 50 years ago?
I feel glad that we are reunited.
It's still divided. Mentally, it's mixed, but the politics is communism.
Faut pas oublier le passé, mais quand même, faut vraiment bien avancer et vivre nos vies, en fait.
I wouldn't say that we are close to US, but neither China.
I think that the people are more friendlier with the Chinese. Even our cultures are almost the same.
Historically, my parents came from south of Vietnam, so there was pro-US.
Vietnam has to strike a balance between China and US relationship.
So, Duan Bui, full disclosure here. When Jade went to interview those people in that great place in the 11th arrondissement, They were a bit reluctant talking about the past, but they were quick to talk about the trade tensions of the present. Does that surprise you?
Because actually, as Claire Tran said, our memories are so divided, and sometimes it's difficult to talk about the past, and people, they still get mad, you know, just the term, just tell Saigon or Ho Chi Minh City, Giải Phóng, Liberation, or the fall. So I think that right now the biggest challenge to me when I see Vietnam and the Vietnamese diaspora, it's like separated islands. For example, I was yesterday in San Jose and they're preparing the commemoration for what they call Black April, and they still have, you know, this old flag from the South Vietnam Republic. And it's like, you know, in some parts of San Jose, in the diaspora, they are like in a time capsule. It's like the time stopped in 75, and even the way of speaking Vietnamese, it was frozen in 75. But right now, you can see in the new generation, a lot of people, Vietnamese from the diaspora, are coming back to Vietnam, learning back Vietnamese. That's my case. So we want to have this contact with the new Vietnam, with the new Vietnamese language, with this new culture. And so there is this urge to building a bridge between past and present and to reunite all those islands. So this Vietnamese island, which is the Vietnamese diaspora and which is so numerous, not only in the US, but in France, in Australia, even in Ukraine and Russia, in Eastern Europe. And Vietnam understands that the Vietnamese diaspora is an asset for the economics, but also for its cultural power. So I think that right now there was a will, and that's why they don't talk anymore about liberation, but about reunification. And this word reunification, it's very crucial because it's all about, you know, building this bridge between 75 and 2025 and like building a common future.
And a lot has happened in the years in between. We remember 9 years ago, Barack Obama visiting Vietnam. Trade between the U.S. And the Vietnam has soared. Will that continue with the Trump administrations this year? You can see the charts here showing just how much it's increased just in the time since Obama visited. With the Trump administration's threat of 46% tariffs on all imports, tariffs that are on hold until July, what with Vietnam's trade minister kicking off bargaining last week with a phone call to the U.S. trade representative. Your thoughts, on Robert Manning, on why the Trump administration is putting this opening gambit of such high tariffs on Vietnam when business is booming?
Well, I think this you have to look at in the larger context of the Trump administration is trying to go after China, and countries like Vietnam, Malaysia, Thailand, China plus one, where investment has reshored from China to Southeast Asia, is using Chinese interim components. And so when you have Vietnam with $123 million surplus, the White House is essentially trying to go after the entire Asian operating system, the production networks, and that's I don't know how far it will get or how much of a deal they'll be.
I was going to ask you, Robert,
how
does this movie end?
I'm not even sure Trump knows. I think I expect we had a wave of the markets tanking, the dollar tanking. Now it's sort of stabilized, but we're starting to see a lot of the canceled container ships and air shipments from Asia, from China. The effects of those over the next few weeks are going to start to cause price rises and shortages, and we'll have to see if Trump backs off again. It's not clear. The problem is he's kind of trapped himself because tariffs are part of his identity, and so how much flexibility is there to lower them and still, you know, he wants revenues for the U.S. budget from tariffs, for example. So there's a lot of contradictions in their whole trade policy, and it's not clear how they're going to play out.
Yeah, others are hedging too, by the way. Japan's prime minister paying his respects at Ho Chi Minh's mausoleum Monday outside Hanoi as Shigeru Ishiba, whose country faces, by the way, a threat of 24% tariffs from the U.S., talked up the prospect of more deals and free trade and investment between Tokyo and Hanoi. You're Jim Lorry in the in Ho Chi Minh City right now. You saw in that reporter in that Paris cafe earlier. You know, people talking about, well, do we lean more towards the U.S.? Do we lean more towards China? How do the Vietnamese feel?
In the talks that I've had in the last few days here in Ho Chi Minh City, I can tell you this. The Americans are pushing the Vietnamese closer to China. The tariffs are not going down very well here, of course. Even the thought of the tariffs are not going down very well here. In addition to that, the United States told its diplomats here in Vietnam not to attend any of the official activities that are going on in the next day or so. There'll be no American official at the parade tomorrow. This is a policy which, of course, the Vietnamese are very much upset by. Meanwhile, you have Xi Jinping coming into Hanoi just 2 weeks ago, promising all kinds of things, but indicating that if the Vietnamese economy suffers because of the American tariffs, the Chinese will do everything they can to make up the difference. There's also a delegation from the People's Liberation Army of China parading tomorrow here. There's no American presence. There are the representatives of countries that fought alongside of America during the war. They're all here. The Americans are absent. This does nothing for the development of Vietnamese-American relations. And I would think it is certainly to the benefit of China.
Robert Manning, your reaction? There's no U.S. delegation at the ceremony?
That's correct. No official delegation activities here.
Robert Manning.
Yes. You have to remember, Trump is closing embassies. He's downsizing the State Department. He's demonized the Foreign Service, you know. So all those things. And I think that they have a very small-minded business view of the world, and diplomacy is not their strong suit. You know, if you look at what Trump's done, he's making, they tend to make demands, not negotiate deals, not negotiate in the classic sense of diplomacy. And so I think this was one way of exhibiting that.
Claire Tran, when you heard Jim Lorry say that, what was your reaction that there's no U.S. representation at this?
Yes, it's very stunning. I would say that I was in Vietnam when Trump was elected. And at that time, he was very popular in Vietnam among the Vietnamese communists because they say he is strong with the Chinese. They will help us in the South China Sea. So it completely changed. But I think that Vietnamese diplomats and Vietnamese leaders know how to deal with great power. They have to deal since so many times with the Chinese. So they are pragmatic. So they send a delegation to Washington to deal with the American for this tariff. So I think they are they try to manage that. But so China will become more influent, but the policy of Vietnam, it's really always to have a balance. So there is not only China in Asia, Japan, India, Australia, and the EU. I think that really Vietnam tried to make the balance, and even if now China seems to be more stable, more sure than now the America of Trump, they are not so confident in China. So they have to, they are very dependent from the Chinese economy.
Okay, not so confident in China, but there was the recent visit by China's president, as we've said, followed up last week by joint naval maneuvers in the Beibu Gulf, a.k.a. the Gulf of Tonkin.
Yes, so it's true that now Chinese, the U.S. lost his chance. And it was very important for Vietnamese for many years to keep the balance. And they, you have shown the result of the economy since the exchange with the United States. They really enjoy with this relation, but now it's really much more difficult. But they are thinking to working more with Chinese, but also with other partnership to balance this Chinese power and influence.
So, Duan Bui, the Vietnamese play the long game. They know that they have a powerful neighbor in China, and so they're always slightly wary. Still, so what does that mean for the U.S.-China relations? Is this just a blip, and once Donald Trump goes away, we're back to those booming trade relations that we've seen?
Just to go back again about history and China, it's, as Claire Tran was saying, it's been such a long history, like for 1,000, 2,000 years, Vietnam has been forced, you know, to preserve its identity because there was this very powerful neighbor. And for example, just our language, Vietnamese language, for a very long time, our alphabet, it was a Chinese alphabet, the nom, it was adapted for Vietnamese, but we were very close to this Chinese culture. And then comes colonization, almost one century of French colonization, and the alphabet changed and it becomes a Latin alphabet. And just this, I think it's very symbolic of the history of Vietnam, because Vietnam had always to be so flexible. And right now you have this mixture. You have the Chinese influence. You have also the legacy of the French colonization. You have the legacy of the American War and the Civil War. And Vietnam is this example of extraordinary resilience of this very fraught history, which was so divided, but still, it's still booming, and there is such an energy in not only in the economy, but also in the artistic world, in cinemas and everything. I think a lot of things are happening right now in the Vietnam of 2025. Even if there was this, you know, this very the burden of the past. So and I think all that is happening right now, it's also because of this past, because of this very complicated past. So again, I don't think Vietnam is erasing the past. It is using it to build the future.
And again, it brings us back to what you were saying, Jim Laurie, about the people attending these commemorations are young people with vitality.
The young people may not be in the official ceremonies, but they are certainly out in the streets, and they have been generally supportive of this holiday. After all, the young people are the backbone of this economy. I went out yesterday to the Ho Chi Minh City University and to the new high technology area of the city, where they are developing really a very aggressive semiconductor industry, and all the latest technology is out there. 100,000 students enrolled at Ho Chi Minh University, and it is a sprawling new campus. I was very struck by how young people are really being positioned to take the economy of Vietnam forward. And I've also been struck how, and I travel often to China as well as Vietnam, and everything is relative, of course, but Vietnam does feel it is even more on the move than China right now. You go to China and they are in a bit of a recession at the moment, and you don't quite feel the energy that you used to feel in China. You feel that energy here in Vietnam.
They're getting old, Claire Tran, like we are in Europe?
So what I wanted to say about the youth is that in no other country, communist country, the few which exist now, you have a great diversity of elite in Vietnam. You have the French, old French elite, the American, the Russian, the Central Europe elite, and now the Vietnamese are studying in Australia, in everywhere in the world. And it's really this. It's a chance. It's a history, all these different influence, but it's a chance. And I think that they are really able to adapt themselves to many different culture. And it's a chance for the future, for this youth. And I have to say that really it's impressive, the capacity of the youth to study everywhere. And the government, it's a communist government, it's possible for them to study abroad. And there is also American University, Fulbright University is open in Ho Chi Minh City. So there is not a lot of a communist country, I think, which is so open in the few communist country which exist today.
So Duan Bui, you can have what is not a democracy and still be vibrant and innovative?
Yeah, actually, it's still the Communist Party which is ruling. So I wouldn't say that there is a total freedom of speech right now. But still, if we make the comparison with China, I'm really astonished when I see the energy and the creativity right now in cinema, even if sometimes those films, for example, they can get prizes in Cannes and other film festivals, and it's not possible to see them officially in Vietnam. But still, you can see this, this creativity. And also, just to come back to the Vietnamese diaspora, for a very long time, the Kiều, the Vietnamese from the diaspora, were considered as traitors because we were, you know, the children of the people who fled the country. It has totally changed. And this young generation who goes abroad to study, they really have a lot of interest in the Vietnamese diaspora, and as I said at the beginning, the Vietnamese diaspora is also coming back to Vietnam to settle sometimes, to start businesses, and it's this mixture, you know, of people from the Vietnamese diaspora, American, Australian, or French, coming back to their homelands. The young people born in Vietnam who studied in the US but who finally decide to go back to Vietnam. And this very weird mixture, it's starting to build a new identity. And that's what I find very fascinating right now in Vietnam.
Jim Lurie, one final question about the American veterans who are in Vietnam. There are a few. I mean, I've seen US veterans on the beaches of Normandy. But of course, that was a victory. The U.S. veterans who come back to Vietnam, why are they coming back?
There are many, actually, U.S. veterans returning to Vietnam to see where they fought. I was with a group just last year, about 20 men from West Point and 20 men from the U.S. Naval Academy at Annapolis. They were very young officers when they were in Vietnam, and they risen up the ranks, and they had come back to go back to those battlefields where they had lost comrades, and it was a very emotional experience for many of them. I ran in today. I was in downtown Saigon, ran into a man who introduced himself to me. He was one of the U.S. Marine Guards of the U.S. Embassy that left on one of the final helicopters out of the embassy on the 30th of April, 1975. A delegation of U.S. veterans visited the Consul General here in Saigon today. So there are many there. Many of them are seeking closure. Obviously, most of the veterans are well into their 70s or 80s at this point, and this is sort of their last chance to see the place where they grew up, if you will, as young soldiers.
And just very briefly, because we're out of time, Claire Tran, what about the Vietnamese veterans? Is this also a big day for them?
Well, the veterans of that time was the veteran for the victory, but you have also veterans from the Cambodia and the veterans with the war with China. And in that case, it's not really a very good situation because it was not a victory. It's complicated for them because China, they have to pay attention with China. So the veterans for that war are okay. I mean, it's a victory and it's a big date for them. But there was other war after that. It was not the last war, the end of the last war. You have the occupation of Cambodia and then the war against China, which was from 1979 to 89 almost, with a lot of conflict. So you have also all these veterans who are not recognized as those of 1975.
For what is officially known as Reunification Day. We'll have to leave it there, unfortunately. Claire Tran, I want to thank you so much. I want to thank Jim Laurie for burning the midnight oil in Ho Chi Minh City, Robert Manning in Washington, Duan Bui in San Francisco. Thank you for being with us here in the France 24 debate.